Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and there's bad news for foodies this morning. Condé Nast is shutting down Gourmet Magazine, that bastion of sumptuous, time-consuming food preparation and dining. And the New York Times also has a story today about a soon-to-be-released study that shows that one of the city's efforts to promote healthier food choices might not be working. So joining me now to go into the details and talk about what all this says about the American way of eating today is Marion Nessel from NYU's Department of Nutrition, Food Studies, and Public Health, who writes the blog Food Politics and had the book by the same name. Hey, Marion, welcome back to the show.
Oh, glad to be here.
And let's start with Gourmet. I cannot say that I was a regular reader, but it's an institution and a shock to many that it's been shut down after 68 years in publication. Was it a surprise to everyone?
Well, I think it was a complete shock, and plenty of people around my shop were crying over it. It's an enormous loss. For one thing, it was a place where a lot of people published their work because it had kind of interesting articles about a lot of different topics. And for another, it's just such a venerable institution. It's part of the food scene and in many ways led the food scene for a long time. But people considered it elitist and too rich. And in this economy, these kinds of things are falling like flies. But this one's a big loss.
And listeners?
Fortunately, our library has a bound set going back all the way to the beginning.
Really? Hard copies? 68 years of hard copies.
Yeah, I think so. Wow. We were given it. So, happy to have it.
Let's hear from some Gourmet subscribers. What did the magazine give you? Has that changed over the years? Was it an aspirational read for you or instructional? Call us at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And obviously the economy is treacherous, Marion, for any media organization today, but not all of them are going down. Does the loss of Gourmet mean that it had become somehow out of step with how Americans actually eat?
Well, from what I've been seeing and hearing, a lot of people think that. A lot of people think that Rachel Ray is where people really want to be in their cooking, and that cooking has become so democratized that people are no longer interested in these elite kinds of magazines, and that you can get good food at supermarkets everywhere in America now. And I think Gourmet had a lot to do with that.
And that was...
So it's done. It's work. Maybe it's finished.
The Times lead on this story was, it's Rachel Ray's world. We're all just living in it. So for better or worse. I want to bring in the other food story today, and maybe people want to call in on this too, with your experiences and how you are or are not being affected by this particular Bloomberg initiative. Our appetite for cheap fast foods, often at the expense of our health, seems to be pervasive. And we have in New York City the rule that chain fast food restaurants need to post calorie counts. So researchers compared receipts at area fast food restaurants before and after the calorie posting started and found that the average calorie counts purchased went from 825 to 846. Per order, so up slightly. Does that surprise you?
Well, I had seen these papers, so I've had time to digest them for a while. There were two things that were happening with the calorie posting in New York restaurants. One was that for people like me who went in, it was complete sticker shock, and even I was just floored by the number of calories that were posted on menu boards. I couldn't believe that these foods had so many calories. And it certainly changed my buying habits at some of those places.
Give me an example of something that shocked you. Can you do that?
Oh, I certainly can. In the first week that the calories were posted, there was a blueberry pomegranate smoothie at Kosi that was listed at 1,200 calories.
Wow. That's very smooth.
Now, that may have been an error, or it may have been that they then changed the composition of that because it's now down to about 500 calories, which is still a lot. It's a quarter of a day's calories for something that was a large size. And there was also a pizza for one at that place that was 2,200 calories.
Whoa.
Now those are no longer there, and the calories are way, way down on them, and either that was because they made a mistake in the calculation, or it was because they've lowered the calories in those foods. And it seems to me that the largest effect of the calorie labeling initiatives has been that the companies have been lowering the number of calories in their servings, either by reducing the portion size or by changing the ingredients. So that may be the biggest effect of calorie labeling. I would argue that people don't go to McDonald's to lose weight. They're not interested in calories, or they wouldn't be going to McDonald's. I mean, these are not... this is not the population of people that's on a diet that you're dealing with. And so I wasn't particularly surprised by the findings that they had. I think if they went into if they had looked at more upscale fast food places like COSI or Pan Quotidien or some of the other places that are a little bit more upscale, I think they would find differences. Pan Quotidien, for example, must have been so strongly affected by the calorie labeling that they took it off.
That's so interesting because the study focused on low-income neighborhoods because of the higher incidence of obesity and diabetes there. So you think maybe middle-class fast food goers or chain restaurant goers pay more attention to the calorie postings?
I think that's a hypothesis that's quite testable. And, you know, they could easily have tested that one as well, but they chose to do a different one. And they were dealing with a population of people who have many fewer choices of places to eat. So it's hard to know what the overall meaning is. But for me, calorie labeling is worth it because of the effect that it's having on the companies, in the same way that putting trans fat on the label of packaged food products made the companies get rid of the trans fat instantly. As soon as they knew they were going to have to admit how much they had.
Mary Nessel from NYU, who writes the Food Politics blog and wrote the book Food Politics, with me on WNYC as we talk about these studies on the effects of the calorie counts posted in New York City food chains, restaurant chains, and also the demise of Gourmet magazine announced by Condé Nast yesterday. And Tamara in Astoria is going to miss Gourmet. Hi, Tamara.
Hi, Brian. So incredibly sad to me. I have several friends who work for Gourmet, several people who come to dinner at my house on a regular basis, and not that they lost their jobs, but also I learned to cook from Gourmet. I literally decided that I wanted to learn to cook about, 15, 20 years ago now, and I picked up Gourmet magazine because in my mind that was the best possible place that I could, that was the highest thing that I could aspire to.
Give me the super condensed version of a recipe that you got from Gourmet that changed your life.
It was a white chocolate lemon mousse bomb cake, and I made it for years, and it was incredibly ridiculous and fun, and I don't know where that recipe is now. I lost it like 6 moves ago, and I have no idea where it is, but God, I love that cake, and I made so many people happy with it.
You're going to have to post the calorie counts for your dinner guests.
We don't think about that. I just give them salads. But seriously, I have a cookbook being released today, and Gourmet magazine taught me to cook. I mean, it couldn't be more sad to me.
Tamara, thanks a lot. And now they have the full bound set at the NYU Food and Nutrition Department. Michaela in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. Yes, I was just calling. Our family moved here from Virginia, where they did not post calorie counts anywhere. And since we've moved here, we've totally stopped going to fast food, period. We haven't hit any McDonald's or any Burger King's in the last year once we walked in and saw those calories sitting up on the menu.
So there's one testimonial, Marion.
There you go. I think there are plenty of people like that. They just weren't captured by that study.
Kathleen, is it? Or Kathleen in Bergen County?
Hi, Kathleen, yes.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. You're going to miss Gourmet.
Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
Oh, my God, I'm devastated. My son's both wrote me emails. They live in Boston. What a death this is for our family. I've been collecting since the early 70s. I was published 3 times in Gourmet, and I learned to cook. I'm a self-taught chef. And between Dion Lucas, Gourmet Magazine, and Julia, I have come a long way, and I'm going to miss it terribly. I think it's an icon, and I think it's I'm just very, very sad. I know that's a little bit exaggerating, but it is a death in a way.
Yes, death of a food bank.
It's a death in the family, I think, for people who've relied on it, who've read it, who participated in it, who've written for it, and who found it as a part of the food culture. It's a big loss.
So I think Adam in Chelsea had canceled his subscription anyway, right, Adam?
I did. I used to love Gourmet and got it for years, but in recent years it's become more of a lifestyle magazine and how to have a fabulous dinner party in Italy and less about the food. Mm-hmm. So I switched to Cook's Illustrated and that type of magazine.
Adam, thank you. Evan in Yorkville, you've been affected by the calorie counts?
Oh, yeah, I think it's got anywhere from, you know, any of the restaurants that have posted it. I was in an Outback at one point, the only time I've ever been there, and there was salmon on the menu that you would think, okay, salmon's a good choice, and it was something like 1,500 calories, which floored me, and I've been in, even in McDonald's or Wendy's, and looked at something that I knew was bad, but kind of like your guest said, I didn't realize quite how bad it was, and it's made me, you know, make better, if, you know, not good choices.
Yeah. Evan, thank you. And Mary Nestle, you wrote on your blog, Food Politics, about Coke's announcement, Coca-Cola, that they would post calories on the front of their containers. So maybe they've seen these studies and suspect it won't have an effect on consumption.
Oh, particularly because they're posting calories per serving, not the full number of calories that's in the bottle. So I think that's just fine. Everybody's still got to do the math. If I had one thing that I could teach everybody, it would be that larger portions have more calories.
That's a shock.
It's not intuitively obvious. Trust me on this one.
So
it's really not.
So you mean for Coke, just to take the example, if they... I haven't looked, but so let's say a 20-ounce bottle of Coke, that's
yeah,
not considered...
The label will say 100 calories per serving, 2.5 servings per container. It won't say 250 or 275 calories on the front, which is what the Food and Drug Administration proposed 5 years ago, but the soda industry fought it so hard that it's still stuck in the Federal Register. I'm hoping the new FDA will... unleash that one.
So clearly, and we just have 10 seconds, you do not want the city to be dissuaded from the calorie counts by these studies showing no effect.
Oh, not at all. I don't think the data are in yet, and I think it's having a big effect.
We'll leave it there with Marion Nestle, Paulette Goddard Professor in the Department of Nutrition, Food Studies, and Public Health at NYU. She wrote the book Food Politics and blogs under that title, too. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC.